What does that mean for 100?
It means that if we add that to what I've already done in the 200, I'm running 1910. And I believe like 965, somewhere around there.
What does that equate for the 200?
Well, you know, if he gets that much better in 100, which is about 1%, then you get 1% better in the 2, if everything's equal. And, you know, maybe you can run the world record, you know, 1915, 1912, somewhere in that range based off the same math, if I'm using it correctly. And, you know, will he do that? Now, that's hard to say. I mean, when you start talking that fast, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of intangibles that you can't control.
That's Noah Lyles and his coach, Lance Brahman, who invited us and some select media down to their Adidas Pure Athletics group to observe a day of training. Check out our talks with them around the 8230 mark. Check the show notes for the exact timestamp. And if you like this podcast, you'll love a second podcast every week that is only available to letsrun.com supporters club members. We broke down the NCAA meet, Nico Young, Parker Valby, in great detail on Sunday, but only supporters club members got it. Join today, letsrun.com/subscribe. You not only get the second podcast, if you join for a year, you get a super soft running t-shirt, you get savings on running shoes, and a lot more. letsrun.com/subscribe.
Welcome everyone to the letsrun.com track talk podcast. The NCAA indoor championships are in the books and the 2024 indoor season is complete. We offer some final takes on the meet as we head outdoors in an Olympic year. The Bowman Mile has announced its first three athletes and it's set to be a barn burner. May 25th in Eugene, you don't want to miss it. Jakob Ingebrigtsen, Josh Kerr, and Jared Neguse. We're going to do a way too early preview of that race, which is probably going to be one of the most hyped races of the outdoor season. Plus, Nico Young is making his 10K debut this weekend at the 10. Leonard Correa is trying to boost his Olympic chances at the Lisbon Half Marathon this weekend. Oh yeah, and he's also running the Rotterdam Marathon next month. We break all of that down, and at the end, we've got interviews with Noah Lyles, the world champion in the 100, 200, and 4x100 meter relays, as well as his coach, Lance Brauman. This is Jonathan Galt. I'm joined by Robert and Weldon Johnson, the co-founders of letsrun.com and the co-hosts of this podcast. Guys, thank you for covering for me in my absence last week. Did a bang-up job. I listened to the podcast from Italy. Yes, that's where I was on vacation. I'm back stateside. I'm here to offer the counterbalance that I always am against Rojo's sometimes brilliant, sometimes insane analysis, and Weldon's, I'd say Weldon, you're kind of in the middle between what Robert and I provide. So happy to be back talking track with you guys.
Glad you could make it, John. Week vacation, and then we had to delay the podcast like an hour so you could eat dinner.
Wait, can I interject? I want to provide some context here. It was a five-day vacation. I was back for Saturday for NCAAs. Actually, very prominent track coach in the NCAA. Some would say the best coach in the NCAA was like, John, I was worried. I didn't see you here at day one. Don't you live in Boston? Like, I think he was concerned something had happened. I was like, no, it's fine. I was just on vacation. We delayed delayed, quote-unquote, the show so I could eat dinner. Apparently, we were supposed to record this thing at 8 p.m., except one of the three people on the show was not told we were doing it at 8 p.m. So I hadn't had dinner because I was working on an article for letsrun.com. I was doing my job. Sorry.
John, in your absence, I've been trying to do a power move here.
We realized it wasn't, he wasn't really missed, right, Weldon? We were just moving on without him. And then he texted us, what time is the podcast?
I flew down to Florida, took your spot at the Noah Lyles Pure Athletics Adidas Media Day. I mean, this was set up very nicely. It was like Japanese TV, international TV, the Netflix sprinting crew. like sort of looking for the usual people I see around at these things. I didn't see them. Yours truly rolls in pretending to be Jonathan Galt. But first I had to settle things up with Noah, like real quickly. We got an interview with Noah. I am now a total sprint expert at the end, and his coach, Lance Brauman. Learned a lot. Still got a lot to learn on the sprints, but great conversation with both of them. But, you know, Noah throws out 1910. Lance Brauman throws out 1912, 1915. But world records are secondary to them. But that's not what's important. I got the groundbreaking news. Noah Lyles has run a 4x8. He has run a 4x8 in his life. Let's Run, people. Get on it. Find out what time he ran. He needs to move up in distance. His mother, who is the runner in the family, contrary to what everybody says, everybody always talks about his dad. There is one Lyles member who has won an NCAA championship. That is Keisha Bishop, his mother. No one else in the Lyles family has won an NCAA championship, will ever win an NCAA championship. She ran cross country at Seton Hall, I found out. But when I first showed up and sat down with Noah, and that's where the interview just starts off, I'm like, whoa, 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 I'm not the guy. I'm the brother. We're identical twins, man. But it's all good. I had to pretend to be John, pretend I wasn't Robert, but smooth sailing here on out.
I just want to set the record straight here. You said no one in the Lyles family will ever win an NCAA title. Just so you know, Noah's girlfriend, Janelle Bromfield, is an Olympic medalist in the 4x4 for Jamaica. So I wouldn't totally discount Noah's kids one day from maybe winning an NCAA title. But yes, the only current members of the Lyles family, that would be his mom, Keisha.
Noah, if you're listening, hi, it's Rojo. I think you're great for track and field. But it is better for me if you don't win Olympic individual golds. I didn't think you weren't talented. I just thought you missed your time. But hey, looks like you've COVID threw everybody off. He was okay. But John, I had a number of people. Well, not a number, but we were swarmed. I don't know if the right word is groupies, John, but John was upset. We did a Saturday night podcast for the Supporters Clubs. We did it live, though. So if you catch it live on YouTube, you got to saw it. And John was mad that I was too into a number of people to meet were like, hey, let's run, coming up to us. You know, this was the first sporting event that my son has ever attended. So it was important to me that I look important. I didn't want to look like some nerd in the corner with a damn camera interviewing people. I wanted to look important. So these people, like sitting three rows from my 6-year-old, were like, hey, Rojo, come get beers with us, blah, blah, blah. So that was fun. But I did have someone ask, like, where's John? In Europe? They were hoping it was with a lady friend. John was in Europe with a lady. But
you're on thin ice here, Robert. Choose your next words carefully.
It's not every day that. I mean, look, people, look, it's 2024. It's 2024. This is not 1984. It's 2024. John and his sister are both allowed to have the same love. And it's a passionate love affair. They've had it since birth, really. They both are big supporters of Brighton and Hove Albion soccer team. They're playing an important match in Rome, from what I understand. John was only able to get tickets because he's a U.S. citizen. And he had to act like he wasn't supporting Brighton. And then I was worried, John, I was reading about Brighton supporters being stabbed. Actually, I took some notes. Brighton called for a UEFA ban. Not only were two people stabbed, during the match, people threw bottles, coins, and lighters at the fan. And, John, I know you're not really a royalist. You're not really a big fan of the Queen. But did you see this? They unveiled a banner at the match.
I don't know if we're even allowed to say what the banner said about the Queen. I did hear about it.
If you have children, just have them turn away for a second, mute it for the next 10 seconds. The Queen gave blow, beep. And I never thought about that. What do you guys think? Thumbs up or thumbs down that the Queen ever did do that act?
Robert, I'm not going to wait in on that. I'm no fan of the royals, but we don't need to speculate about their private lives like that, even though that is the popular parlor game these days in the UK with Princess Kate.
Well, what's going on with that? By the way, so I was reading about the Queen because of Brighton, and now Google thinks I'm into the Queen, and I'm being inundated by Kate. What happened? Is the new guy, what's Prince Charles' son? He fathered a child out of wedlock. Is this true? What's going on? I don't know anything
about that. I can't tell you the details. I honestly don't know. I just know there's a lot of speculation about Kate, and that's really, I think all our listeners need to know. They're tuning in to listen to Track and Field podcasts, so let's talk some track and field.
Wait, I apologize to all of our like sprinters listening, you know, trying to listen to Noah Wiles. Always check the show notes. You can jump ahead just to see when the interviews are. That'll be in the back half at the end of the podcast. But, and we got to keep this podcast tight because we got 40 minutes with them at the end. But this is, your soccer match is relevant to running, John, and what you do, because you had to sit there in a stadium of 60,000 people pretending you weren't rooting for a team. It's like just John says he watches all these track meets and he's not rooting for someone. That's a lie. And John has shown he can do it with the best. He did it at a stadium in Rome and he does it at every athletics meet. Deep down, you're probably rooting for someone. We all are human beings, John.
No, I've said this many times. Growing up, like, did you guys have like favorite golfers or tennis players you rooted for or track and field athletes? I found that very hard. I was just like, I have my teams. I have my Boston teams. I have my teams in England. For an individual sport, I'm like, I'm supposed to care for this guy versus this guy. Have you ever been to a golf tournament or watched them on TV? Everyone just cheers for the winner at the end. If you're really a true fan, you would cheer for, like, wouldn't you just cheer for your guy? You wouldn't be happy for the other guy that won? Like, I always found that very difficult for anyone in an individual sport. So it's really has not been that hard as a journalist to just not root for individual people.
John, I rooted for lots of people. One of them might have been Mike Marsh, the 200-meter world record holder at one point. Olympic gold medalist, correct, John?
I think so. Did he win LA? USATF relay coach? Wait, how is it? Mike Marsh, I Google Mike Marsh. The first thing that comes up is some musician. The drummer of the Avett Brothers is more prominent than Mike Marsh, the U.S. Olympian, and the 1992, not 1984, Olympic champion, the 200 meters. I'm sorry, that Mike Marsh, the runner, should be more popular than Mike Marsh, the drummer for the Avett Brothers.
But I remember sort of he was bald and he looked smaller than the other guys, and I thought it was cool he had the world record. And back then, the 71 world record that it stood forever. He came really close to it, or maybe it was 72. And
Pietro Mennea, right?
Yeah. I think Marsh became like a hundredth of it. But anyway, I'm at this track for a little while, and it's been a few hours, and like some guy shows up, and I think he's wearing jeans. He starts like goes out on the track, starts doing some talks to some people. I can tell he's not really part of the group, and starts taping the track. And I just sort of go up and talk to him. I'm like, hey man, like, what are you doing to the for the tape? Like, I wasn't sure why he's taping the track. I thought he was a maintenance guy. And turns out it was Mike Marsh, the relay coach. Just happened to be in town, shows up. I guess he goes around the country. He's doing this a lot of different places. And I'm like, you're Mike Marsh? It's like, oh my God.
Wait, did you ask him the obvious question you should have asked? Was Noah Lyles splitting 45-68 at World Indoors enough to get him on the Olympic relay team? Because my whole point this week was it is not. But I need, you know, this would have been an obvious question to ask him.
Well, I told Noah it's not. Your week that was makes a strong point. It's not enough. I mean, we just had a high school kid run, 45-7 open. But I started talking to him, and I'm like, hey, man, like, I'm with the media. Like, can I record this? And he's like, let's talk later. So I did not get the question out there.
Speaking of the week that was, I filled in for Robert because this is what happens at a professional organization like this. We cover for each other. You guys covered for me when I was on vacation. Then Rojo was on vacation. So I wrote the week that was this week. I thought I did a good job. Weldon thought I did a good job. But I care about Robert's opinion. He's my boss as well. And I said, what'd you think? And before the show, he just kind of told me, no. Got some issues. So Robert, this is an open forum. I'm open to criticism. What are your problems? Lay them out there for me.
On the positives, the younger generation is supposed to start with positive things. As my son said, actually, on the way back from swim lessons, on the way home, Dad got mad. Why was that? I was like blown away. But we got to talk before the end of the show. Someone write these down to remind us. The NCAAs were my son's first sporting event and what my wife thought of it. by the way. We need the pole vault both days because they didn't get to see the pole vault. But no, I was glad that someone did it for me. And it's weird. I used to really pride myself on running through this every week. And then the podcast, I've gotten a little lazy sometimes in recent years. I don't do it every week. Like Peter King, Monday morning, quarterback, every Monday morning. You got it out on Monday, so good for you. But there was just, John, you made the same mistakes, like factual mistakes. I guess it's not
factual mistakes?
But predictions mistakes that you've made in the past. Okay. Remember when John said, Eliud Kipchoge's world record will stand forever. Or, you know, like a decade, 20 years. And then it was broken like a year later.
Wait, you're not going to say that this Park of Albi thing is going to be broken in the next 10 years. I'm sorry. No one's running 1452 anytime soon.
Stop. Here's John running. Providence Kim Smith's NCAA record stood for 20 years. And Albi just broke that record by 20 seconds. This could be the equivalent of Henry Rono's NCAA outdoor meet record of 8:12. And the steeple from 1978. Which still stands 46 years later. I was like, is John watching the same track meets that I am? Look, Parker Volby's amazing. Chris Lear's family also attended when his high school son, Lucas, by the way, if you listen to the podcast, we love you. He's like, you know, he's a ninth grader. He's like, hey, is anyone famous going to be there? I tried to play up Volby as being famous, you know, like NCAA record holder. It's not like we have Mondo at the meet this year. And, anyway, so I tried to play up his family. Look, she's really good. 1452, that championship record, I could see standing maybe for 15, 20 years. But NCAA record?
That's not the point I was making, though. I was saying as a meet record, I think that thing will stand 20 to 30 years. Maybe 50, like could be 40 or 50 years. As a collegiate record, could be gone within the next 5 years. That's where we are.
Could be gone within 12 months. Okay, as long as you agree with me. Because the one thing that doesn't make sense about the NCAA, and Bobby was amazing. I mean, both days, just insane. But what amazes me is like, okay, supposedly there's an Alabama woman from Kenya that ran 1440 on the roads. If you ran 1440 on the roads last year, running 1510 should not be hard. But she's not even doing that. So, I don't know, super shoes are way better, or it just seems weird to me. So I'm like, okay, maybe she's having trouble adjusting the country. Once she gets her feet on her, next year she could run 1440.
Okay, so complaint number one is Rojo misconstruing something I wrote in the article and actually agreeing with me. Do you have another complaint there, Robert?
Yes.
Well, hold on. When I was reading the article, I thought John was saying, man, that would be the fastest time in the NCAAs. For many years, so maybe we need to make that a little bit clearer.
All right.
And just joining the podcast, and we're like, I don't know, what, 20 minutes in or something, 15. We haven't really freaked out about Parker Valby, Nico Young finally being NCAA champion. It's because we broke this meet down Sunday night. We have a second podcast every week, but unfortunately, you got to be a Supporters Club member to get that podcast. You join. You get a free t-shirt if you join for a year. You get savings and running shoes. It's a win-win. Let'srun.com/subscribe. And Parker Valby, it's official. Connecticut's finest. I saw the interview with you guys. She said, I'm from Connecticut. We finally have it. Connecticut, and I had already found this thing. I'm like, Connecticut needs more pride. We're the home of Parker Valby. And we're America's state, the most patriotic state. We're the least likely to want to succeed from the union. Thank you very much, Connecticut. The future is Connecticut. We love America here. We love Parker Valby. Like, it's apple pie. Connecticut is apple pie. And also, I think we're the richest state. So,
succeed from the there. Union or secede from the union? Well, then.
Secede.
Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to clarify that.
S-E-C-E-D.
Yeah. Okay.
Secede. Should I get into my other complaints? Because then we're going to do the whole podcast. We're going to go talk about Grant Fisher.
Make them quick. I'll rebut them quick. And then we can move on and talk about the big picture stuff.
John was writing about Nico Young, who also was absolutely freaking amazing. And after the race, Nico said, hey, I'm thinking about running the 10,000 meters this next weekend in California. And Coach Mike Smith wasn't sure he'd let him do it. He said, I've got one side telling me yes, one side telling me no. And on Saturday's night show, I'm like, look, Mike, even after you stopped recording, John, you saw me. I was like, Mike, don't overcomplicate this. Like, as a fan, this is insane. He's got to, like, he's in the form of his life. If he's going to run the 10,000 at the U.S. Olympic trials, he needs to have the standard. This is the best chance to get it. And John says about this, you know, Ray saying the timing is unfortunate. Unfortunate. The timing is absolutely perfect.
It's not. He's in the form of his,
John, let me explain myself. He's in the form of his life, and he just he has to do is rest up, run the 10 next weekend. It reminds me very much of the BU 5000 right after NCAA cross country. You get in amazing shape and you run one more race and then you take a break. And I saw some morons on the message boards like saying similar things to you, John, like, oh, you know, like timing's not great necessarily. I'm like, you know, will it count as an NCAA regional time? Who cares? Nico Young should, and this was the one positive to having the podcast delayed an hour so you could eat dinner, because after we recorded that podcast, I've not been following running for 2.5 days. My family's on vacation in Boston, and I was like, Nico Young had better be in the goddamn 10. He is entered the 10. Thank you. Because this is a simple no-brainer decision, and I fully expect him to break 27. People in the Western Board are going to choose 27-20. Are you crazy? Dude's going to run 26, no problem. This is not a big deal. It's not too much racing. You said Chris Derrick raced too much. No. Nico, go pro right now. You don't ever need to run on the NCAA race again. Get the 10, sit out, tell Mike Smith, see ya. I'm getting paid, baby.
All right, two things. 26, no problem. I'm going to push back on that. Guns in my head, I think he breaks 27 minutes. But I don't know if you remember, we had a guy called Grant Fisher on the podcast a few months ago. Robert, it was a pretty good interview. A lot of people listened to it. Sky is the American record holder, 26:33, one of only three Americans ever to break 27 minutes. And he said, sub 27, that is not easy. He said it's a hard time. It's so difficult, in fact, that he punted on USA Indoors, he punted on World Indoors, because he wanted to make sure he was ready to go at this meet. And this is a guy who has run well under 27 minutes. So do I think Nico Young is fit enough to hit that time? Yes. Do I think it's an absolute guarantee? No. And the other point, it's not absolutely perfect. You know what absolutely perfect timing would be? Is the 10 was this past weekend when Nico just ran the NCAA double and he doesn't have to run NCAAs. We know he's in amazing shape, but you're telling me he's more likely to run faster after having run 8,000 hard meters the week before? No. He would have been more likely to run faster if he did not have those races in his legs. He can come in 100% fresh. So he's in great shape. That helps him, but it's not perfect timing.
False. Confidence is up. He's never going to be more confident than he is right now. I can't wait. By the way, unlike Facebook, unlike Twitter, we have a phone number. We want to hear from you. What do you think of this? Is the timing right? Is the timing wrong? Give us a call, 844-LETS-RUN, 844-538-7786. By the way, if you need a new running shoe, go to BetterRunningShoes.com, BetterRunningShoes.com, the best shoe review site in the country. If you're not ready to buy a shoe, hey, you can review a shoe for everybody else. It's like the Yelp of shoes, BetterRunningShoes.com.
Confidence is up. This is a time trial, Robert. Aren't you the guy who always says all this mental aspect is way overblown? It's just about whether you're in shape or not. And suddenly you're saying, oh, it's great. Here's the confidence. Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't confident after he ran 12:57 in Boston a few weeks ago.
In case you're wondering, I did ask John Kellogg 20 minutes ago, what is 27 flat equal to? It's not going to be easy. I'll tell you that much. He's like 12:56. We assume because Nico was viewed as like a plotter until this weekend, you know, the 10K would be his better event because he could just grind things out. But now he's got a kick. And on Saturday night's show, I think this is worth repeating. I said that Nico Young's breakout at NCAAs and the development of the kick in his, is this his fourth year after college or third?
Fourth.
His fourth year after college. You know, it's very reminiscent of Galen Rupp. Galen Rupp could never kick. He never won NCAA title. And all of a sudden, he just goes bonkers. Didn't he win the 3K, 5K, DMR, all in the same NCAAs? And I said, the fact that Nico did this, I would bet my life that there's no PEDs involved with Nico Young or NAU. And unfortunately, I could never say that about Galen Rupp with his ties to Alberto Salazar. But I said, Young developing this kick and developing all of a sudden becoming like just looking unbeatable in NCAA levels, to me, greatly increases the odds that I think Galen Rupp might have actually been clean in high school, although we know he was on testosterone medication in college. Although we know it's a little bit more damning, the fact there was a Nike document saying he was on testosterone medication or boost or something in high school. But honestly, it was a good weekend for Galen Rupp in my mind because of what Nico did. Am I crazy to think that? Like, that's one of my biggest takeaways from the weekend.
That it is possible to develop a kick like in your fourth or fifth year of college by natural means.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, it's not really, I wasn't trying to re-examine Rupp's legacy, but it's not a crazy analysis to make. One thing I was impressed by, and someone's got it in our show notes here, so they wanted to discuss it as well, was I was looking back at the previous athletes who've completed the 3K, 5K double at NCAAs. It's actually more common than not in recent years. 7 of the last 10 NCAAs, someone has won both the 3K and the 5K on the men's side. And 3 of those people were named Edward Cheserek. He did it 3 of the 4 times when he was in college. And it just made me remember like how freaking incredible this guy was. Like, some of these people will do it once and we're like, wow, we're blown away. What an amazing weekend. Like, Morgan McDonald did it in 2019. Abdi Noor did it 2022. Nico Young does it. We're like, this guy's a stud. He's the king of the NCAA. And Cheserek would do it. It was just an expectation that he'd show up and double at these meets or sometimes triple. Like, he wins the 3K and 5K in 2014. Then 2016, he wins the 3K, 5K, and the DMR. And he did this with less time between the DMR final and the 5K final than Galen Rupp did when he did it in 2009. And he did it again in 2017. And he also finished 2nd in the mile that year. The only reason he didn't win all 3 is because a guy named Josh Kerr beat him in the mile. So I was just like, it's insane how good Edward Cheserek was in college. And it's also kind of wild that that hasn't amounted to a more successful professional career.
That was me, John. I was just blown away. I made this chart. And I'm like, this is crazy. He would have done the 3K, 5K double every single NCAAs of his career, except he let Eric Jenkins win, right? I think that's fact.
So 2015, he did not run the 5K. He only ran the DMR on Friday night, which he anchored them to the win. And then he won the mile in 2015 and then said that he let Jenkins win the 3K. So he would have had the DMR mile and 3K if we take his word and say he actually let Jenkins win that race.
That's right. 2015, he did the mile instead of the 5K.
Correct.
But, I mean, I just was blown away. And then it's like, essentially, he was worse his senior year. He loses to Kerr, and then across country, it's the only one he didn't win. I was just blown away. And then outdoors, he pretty much was pulling the double every year, except freshman year, he got beat by Lil Lang. And then senior year, he was injured. Like, his senior year by far was his worst year of college.
All right, John, in terms of your week, the part that I liked was how the stats, the best. I mean, you talk about how common this is. We overreact sometimes in CAs. One of the nice things about Saturday's show was we said, like, let's don't react. It's indoors. But I'm going to read a few things we said, like, Luke Hauser repeated as the mile champion for Washington. I mean, Washington's got so many good milers. It's kind of crazy. But if you look at the NCAA list, just look at who's won the indoor mile in recent years. Luke Hauser, Mario Garcia Roma, 4th in worlds, Cole Harker, 5th or 6th, whatever. Incredible. You know, top 8 in the worlds twice. Jordy Beamish, and then Josh Kerr. So, if you went into a mile, you're knowing pretty good. He's won it 2 years in a row. But this Cheserek talk has me depressed because during the break while you were eating your dinner, John, and I was waiting, I decided to get caught up on the message board. And I don't even know what thread I was reading. I think there might just be a threat bashing Caitlin Toohey. Like, remember when Caitlin Toohey was a prospect? For some reason, people are upset that she's been hurt a little bit, has been racing indoors. They're like, Caitlin Toohey is the Edward Cheserek of the modern era. I was like, oh, wow. John's eyes just, John hadn't thought about that. Looks like John's now.
Well, I think it's just ridiculous to write her off after she's been injured and she's been a professional for 3 months.
That's what I thought. I was like, why are we running up? Like, just because Volpe's good. I mean, my son now obviously is age 6. Toohey or Volpe mania. Clayton's clearly Volpe mania. I mean, he saw Volpe crushed in. You know, I'm kind of kidding. I'm kidding. But yeah, Toohey's been out for a few months and people were like freaking out. Calm down, people. Calm down. I am worried though about the fake Josh curve. If it's your first time listening to the podcast, we had a guy calling in for years saying he was Josh Kerr. We assumed it was fake Josh Kerr.
Well, he calls himself fake Josh Kerr. It is, I mean, unless he's lying about
that. But if Josh Kerr's ego is so big that he's calling into a podcast to act like he's not really calling into the podcast, he would act like he's a fake Josh Kerr, right, John? But he used to call in and we have
my
not
brain
heard,
is broken off
heard.
Of that sentence. I got lost halfway through.
Yeah, we've not heard from him since the World Indoor Championship. So please call us fake Josh Kerr or real Josh Kerr. We'd love to hear from you.
But speaking of Josh Kerr, like, this is amazing. This is a great week of track and field. Usually the indoor season ends, there's a little letdown, but Parker Valby and Nico Young were so good. I mean, there's more probably we can talk about there. Then I see Nico Young is running the 10. I'm like, yes, I wanted to see that. Keep the iron when it's hot. And then I get the text message of all text messages. Josh Kerr, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, and Jarred De Goes are all running the pre-classic Bowerman mile. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Everyone involved with this. Those three guys, the pre-classic, Nike, whoever made this possible. Like, this is what the sport needs. We need major matchups at the World Championships, obviously, but we need them a couple other times through the year. We don't need them every single week, but these three guys going square to square at the biggest domestic meet in the United States that's known for the mile. This or Monaco is the biggest mile in the year every year, in the world every year. Thank you.
And I was getting on the plane when that came through, and I told you guys to put up immediately. At first, I was kind of like, oh, of course they're going to run. Everyone runs pre. They're, you know, they're all Nike sponsors, all the pros. But what's interesting is two of these three guys aren't Nike athletes. They're not obligated to do it. Negus is on and Kerr is Brooks. So it is cool that they're doing it. It's going to be an amazing race. And that's only, what, 5 or 6 weeks away. And there's another crazy thing. Safwan Hassan is running World Cross Country later this month, right? Isn't it 2 weeks, John?
March 30th. I'll be there in Belgrade. Super excited for that.
I mean, that woman is insane. Like, she hasn't run cross country in how many years?
2015 was her last cross country season. These are the kind of crazy things. Like, Safwan Hassan, someone who has famously just taken on all challenges at the professional level, has never run world cross country, not even the junior race, hasn't run a cross country race in more than 8 years, and now she's heading to world cross. Josh Kerr, who has been based in the Western United States since 2016, has never run the Prefontaine Classic. And now he's entered in the Bowerman Mile. So bravo to both of them for signing up. I mean, this Bowerman Mile, I'm so pumped. Pre is always a great meet, but this one is going to get everyone's juices flowing. And it's going to be heavily anticipated, and rightly so. Jakob, Nike athlete, he always runs pre. That's to be expected. Jarred De Goes ran 3:43 American record there last year. He's in the U.S. He likes running Diamond League meets. Not totally shocked by that one. Kerr is the surprise for me, because in previous years, he ran three Diamond Leagues in each of the last 2 years, but he's openly said, like, you know, he's pretty selective with his races. And, you know, I've already seen a couple of quotes. Carl Dennehy had a quote from him in World Athletics saying he kind of accepts he's probably going to get beat a couple times in the outdoor season before the Olympics, but he's fine with that as long as he wins the Olympics. And that clicks with everything he's said in this career to this point. Josh Kerr, if you listen to him through the years, he always says, his goal is to be his very best in the championship on the day of the championship final, and that's really all he cares about. So that's not out of character, these recent quotes. But I'm so glad he's running this race because we haven't seen him face Jakob since the World Championships. And it's also going to be Jakob's first race of the year since he's coming back from the Achilles injury that caused him to miss Eurocross and miss the indoor season. So my question to you guys is, who has the most at stake here? Who benefits the most from a win in the Bowman Mile at the Pre-Classic? And there will be other guys in this field as well to be announced, but these are the three we know probably going to be the three favorites. Is it Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who has not lost a Diamond League since September 2021? He comes back, shows, hey, the injury is not a big deal. I'm still the guy to beat. Is it Josh Kerr, who's on the hot streak of his life, who won the world title last year outdoors, then won the 3K indoors? Or is it Jared Neguse, who has won Diamond Leagues, has beaten Josh Kerr in a Diamond League the last time they raced in Zurich? Yeah, he did lose to Josh at World Indoors, but has never beaten Jakob in his life, and this would be one of the biggest wins of his career. So who benefits the most from a win in this race?
Great question. Great question. But this is what I like, is it's going to be the first race of the year for Jakob, and potentially the first outdoor race for maybe all three. So you can have, the beauty of it is that they can all have a little bit of an excuse. I think the one who benefits the most, oh, wow. I was going to say Kerr. He's not known as a time trialer. He crushes this guy in a time trial after just crushing the 3,000. It's like, okay, how are you going to beat me? But, yeah, it's definitely Kerr. So if Kerr wins, okay, that's his thing. And then Ingebrigtsen, but Jakob can use the excuse of, oh, I'm just working my way back into fitness. So it's not a big deal if he loses. But if Kerr beats Yard in a time trial, Yard's really got no excuses. So you're like, okay, you're already losing to Kerr in a flat-out rapid race. How are you going to beat him in a championship race? So it's bad to me if Yard does not beat Kerr in this race. Not bad, but, you know, on the lofty standards of, that we're holding these guys to. What about you, Weldon? Or John, since Weldon's having a hard time, Weldon's having a hard time answering questions. John, feel free to answer your own question because Weldon's brain seems to be operating slowly tonight. Or maybe it's such a good question, he's really been paused there. Like, pause gets edited out of the podcast. He's been paused for like 12 seconds. But his brain was, you could see his eyes moving, like his brain moving or something.
He'll probably cut that pause to about 2 seconds. No, it's a really good question. Because usually it's obvious, the answers. Who benefits the most from winning this race? If Kerr wins, I think then he's the Olympic favorite, but that may not be a good thing. And Jakob's like, I'll get you when it matters. I'm coming back from fitness. If Jakob wins, it might be, look out, bro. Like, he may be actually the biggest beneficiary because, well, hey, I've been off and I still beat you, bro. Like, look at all this stuff you've been doing. You've been showing off, talking a big game, bragging left and right. I mean, setting world records in the process. Like, now he's actually got a lot to brag about, making the sport very entertaining. And I just whooped your ass. It's like, whoa, he can actually compete with these guys. Yard's sort of been like a, I can't put him in like a, no, he just got a medal at World Indoors. I wasn't going to put him in the same sentence as like Steve Holman running some nice time trials and stuff.
I hate that you guys keep bringing up the Steve Holman comparison. This is a guy who just got a medal at World Indoors. He was won the U.S. title last year. He was fifth at Worlds. The thing about Jared, I was tempted to go him initially, but would him... If he beats Jakob like convincingly in this race and wins this race convincingly, then I think it's a different story. But he went toe to toe with him in Eugene last year in the Bowman Mile. Granted, Jakob did the leading of that thing, but will I think drastically differently about Jared Neguse if he does what he did in Eugene last year and he just pulls ahead at the end and goes by Jakob after Jakob led the whole thing? No, I'll consider him being pretty much similar runner that he was last year, one of the best in the world who can run really fast in a time trial race. So I'm thinking I agree with Rojo's logic about Kerr. Just like if Jakob can't beat Kerr in like a Rabbit Diamond League, he's going to be in trouble. But the interesting thing is, what if, you know, I've seen a few people throw this out on Twitter and I bet Robert agrees with it. Like, if you're Jakob, do you just go to the pre-organizers and say, hey, no rabbits? Like, I'm doing this myself. I feel like he didn't do that last year and he kind of like laughed at your question about it after Silesia, Robert. But if you're trying to simulate the Olympic Games and what it might be like, you know, and you want to try to run a front-running strategy, I mean, I guess you are kind of showing your cards to them, but I'd also want, if I'm Jakob, I want that data. I want to know how I stack up against these guys. So I might actually want to ask for no rabbits. What do you think?
First race back? Wow. I think some of this depends on if anyone crushes the other person.
Right, right.
It's weird though. Even if Jakob wins, as long as he doesn't crush them, I'm still worried he's going to be vulnerable in a non-rabbited race. Even though you assume his fitness improves, I'm still okay. Is it? I mean, we saw the Ethiopian women; they'd all run way faster than everybody else heading into World Indoors. And guess what? Americans got two of the three medals. So it's a different ball game without the rabbits.
Also, do we have confirmation? Is Jakob going to be wearing a blindfold for this race? Will he be wearing the pink Josh Kerr sunglasses? Will he be just, you know, going both eyes open? I kind of need to know the circumstances, because if Jakob's running with a blindfold, I'm less inclined to pick him.
Speaking of Nike and money, which is what the Prefontaine Classic is all about, I'll say one thing. If they don't have a goddamn good rabbit at the 10 this weekend that goes at least 8,000 meters on pace, I'm going to lose it. Like, all these shoe companies, we've got, what, Fisher going for it, Klecker going for it, that's Nike, that's On. We've got Nico Young, which kind of Adidas in high school and college. Like, they'll set up this race under perfect conditions, but the rabbiting is very important, and you need someone to go a long way. I mean, didn't Galen Rupp have a rabbit for like 9,600 meters of his American record, John? Or am I exaggerating?
I don't think it was quite that much, but I think Steven Sambu went about 8,800 or something. But what was so remarkable about that race, one of the first races I ever covered for letsrun.com, by the way, 2014 Prefontaine Classic, is that he had amazing rabbiting like for almost the whole way of this 26.44 American record. And that's rare. These guys... Robert, you're saying, I want someone who can run 27 flat pace for 8,000 meters. How many guys like that exist on Earth? Some of them are in this race. Like, you'd have to find some like Kenyan or Ethiopian and fly them in and say, these guys, if you're fast enough to run it for 8K, you probably want to try to run it for the whole distance and make the Olympics yourself. So I think you're underestimating how difficult it is to actually find one of these guys.
It's a good thing we finally started the podcast, because I was on the forum saying, you know what, Joe Klecker should rabbit this race since he has no relevance as a U.S. pro anymore and would be the perfect rabbit for this race. And then I'm like, wait, oh, I forgot Joe's racing and can probably make the Olympic team. Look, Joe's been way better as a pro than I think, but we can all admit it, as fans. Now, Joe and his family and Sage heard of Klecker, and Joe's father-in-law is a Cornell grad, so I don't want to badmouth him, but it would all be better if Joe Klecker, just from now on, let's give him a lot of money. Let's give him $500,000 a year. He could be like the best rabbit on planet Earth.
But this is just such an insult. The guy has made every U.S. team since he's turned pro. He has one bad indoor season. And Robert, just write him off. Guy's washed. This is an insult.
Me? I wrote him off. You said in the NCAA recap, if you don't have a kick, you've got no relevance as a pro. Joe Klecker does not.
Once outkicked Grant Fisher to win a United States title on the track.
What's the story?
That out there.
Grant Fisher has zero U.S. 10,000 meter titles. And Joe Klecker has several, at least one.
No, Joe Klecker has one and Grant has zero.
God, Grant Fisher, his pro card should be stripped for that. But if y'all can't tell, I've had a few beverages while I've been waiting for this podcast to start. A little less filtered than normal.
All right, this is my fault for eating dinner tonight is that we have a slightly drunker Rojo for the podcast.
Not really. I've had like two Peronis. But do you all not agree to me? Like, you'll be these shoe companies, they're not smart sometimes. Like, it's what is it, penny wise, pound foolish. Like, you'll spend millions of dollars on these clubs, literally, and then you won't spend 20 grand to get. There aren't that many people who could do it, but I bet you could get someone from Kenya to fly. You have to have someone talented, though. And they're probably running World Cross. Maybe they wouldn't do it. I'm predicting the Rabbit doesn't make it more than about 6,000.
All right. Well, they've got Wave Light, and they've got a bunch of guys. I mean, someone's going to man up and take it. Like, Joe Klecker in the 10 last year, Woody Kincaid didn't really want to do the work or didn't feel like he was able to do the work to make the standard. So Joe is like, well, look, someone's going to do it. Like, this is sort of a prisoner's dilemma, but at the same time, like, all these guys know one of us needs to take this. Like, if you don't take the pace, you're leaving your Olympic chances up to someone else. Someone is going to step up. It might end up being Grant Fisher. You don't think? I mean, Grant Fisher is in great shape. He's run 26:33. I bet he could be the Rabbit this race needs if worse comes to worse.
Correct. Fisher's going to end up being the Rabbit. And the more I think about it, do we know what label this is for World Athletics? If I'm a Klecker and those guys, I'm not helping at all. I might slow it down on purpose, try to make another 27:02 race. Because doesn't their 10K from last year count too?
Towards the ranking, yeah. If you go to the Road to Paris list.
When does it start for the 10,000? I think their time from last year might count. And they ran like 27:03. By the way, what I was going to point out is they didn't have the Big Rabbit and they didn't make the time.
Well, yeah, they got the world standard. They did not get the Olympic standard, which is what they wanted last year. The qualification period began on December 31st, 2022. So their times do count towards their rankings. And if you look at the Road to Paris list right now, top 27 make it. Woody Kincaid is 16th. Joe Klecker is 22nd. So they're both in the quota. That is going to change as we have spring races. But yeah, if no one gets the stand in this race, those guys do benefit.
Well, it's going to help them because they don't want Yanko Young getting the standard. So their best scenario is make this a 27:02 race. They're so close with their bonus points, they're going to be in on ranking. And then Nico Young's SOL unless he goes to some road race. Apparently there's an out of zero race, road race.
Well, that may be something the road race may be the way to try to get it in the 10K. I'm surprised we haven't seen more people sort of go that route because there is a train of thought out there that the roads are faster than the track since the super shoes are allowed on the roads and are not allowed on the track.
All right. Another thing, I want to just put a bow on the indoor season before we move to our discussion of outdoors. Biggest winners and losers. Do you guys have any takeaways? I was trying to think. It's always easier for me to come up with winners. Like losers, it's like, did this person have, were they injured or did they not compete or something? But just off the top of my head, I thought who came out as winners? Elie St. Pierre, Noah Lyles, because he dramatically lowered his 60 meter PB, Josh Kerr, who looks even like Josh Kerr and Noah Lyles, those guys were in supreme form in 2023 and they look even better to start 2024. So I think they're winners. Nico Young clearly has developed this big kick. I was thinking of losers and I was just kind of thinking of like the guys who I thought were going to show up and run really fast in Boston and didn't. Like Joe Klecker has not been in good form. Woody Kincaid has not been in good form. Abdi Noor did get the world, he got the Olympic stand in the 5K, but he didn't run as well as I thought he would in Boston. He wasn't really a factor at USA indoors. And then maybe Jakob just because of the injury. I think Jakob will be good. It sounds like he's close to back to full training, but those are some of my losers. So am I missing anyone in terms of winners or losers from this indoor season? I mean, Bryce Hoppel's got to be a winner. He wins world indoors.
Jordy Beamish, John.
Jordy Beamish, that's a good one. Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to make it just like who won world indoors, but it's hard to argue that Beamish, St. Pierre, Hoppel, and Josh Kerr weren't big winners.
I always agree. When you have an amazing year, I always, what I say, hey, people often forget you, everything went well that year. It's hard to just stack it on top. But sometimes at the very top of the world, they are able to stack it on top. So St. Pierre to me is just gigantic. I mean, I think talent doesn't go away, but did we know she'd be back this quickly from pregnancy and just at a totally new level? I do think sometimes after childbirth, women are better. But Jakob, can I say something about him?
No, we never talk about him on this show.
If you're just joining us for the first time, we could talk the men's 1500 every show, all show, if we wanted to.
Speaking of such, Noah Lyles did a podcast with the Total Running Productions guy and heard that. And then he said the same thing to me. He's like, why are all the podcasts distance related? So I said, well, what sprint podcast should I listen to? And he told me that friend of Let's Run, Justin Gatlin, has a sprint podcast. I listened to it, thought it was pretty good. And I think Justin's a very good announcer. I'm going to mend the fences with Justin Gatlin. That's my goal. I have nothing personal with Justin. I think he's a great announcer. I just, when he was competing, I felt like he never answered the question of about what the deal was, and we had very little opportunities to ask about it. So carry on.
I thought I asked one of the Flow Track guys, like way back in the day when they actually did legit journalism, why don't they do sprints? And they said it doesn't get the same views. I don't know if that's true. But I mean, there aren't any tactics to talk about, that's for sure, sprinting. What were we just talking about? I had a brilliant point to make, and now I forgot it.
You're going
to
talk about Jakob because, as is tradition this year, a new batch of quotes just dropped. I mean, this was probably the best piece yet that's been written by Jakob in 2024. It was Rick Broadbent of the Times. Terrific interview with Jakob. I mean, there were so many headline quotes from this thing that I felt I didn't want to just reduce it to a headline because it was a well-written story, but I thought it was a very insightful, compelling piece of journalism.
Wait, this is better than the five other pieces that came out? Like, I'd already reached my... I could talk about Jakob all day, and already, like, I've read all these pieces. It's just another quote. This one was better?
Well, I'm not saying it was the, like, in terms of, like, single greatest quote of the 2024 offseason. I don't know if it produced that, but the way Rick framed it... Also, I mean, we're reading it in English. When we read these Norwegian articles, they're translated from Norwegian, but Rick kind of, like, put stuff in context and explained why he... You know, just kind of gave you a look into his psyche and that sort of thing. I just thought it was very well done, but there were some money quotes in there, and I think Robert wants to get to a few of them.
Correct. So this is the Times, not the New York Times. This is the London. You don't even say London Times. They're so prestigious. You just say the Times.
You say the Times of London if you're going to refer to the city. Yeah.
You know, it's the most prestigious paper in the UK. But the main point I was going to make at first was, it's fascinating to me. Jakob's been injured this year, right? So he hasn't been racing. But what has he done? He's had like, well, just nailed it. Like he's had like four or five feature articles. He's let this Times of Britain and all these Norwegian outlets. Like he's been like going out of his way to do media.
Oh, and you know what was announced today, Robert? They're bringing back Team Ingebrigtsen. It's not going to be called Team Ingebrigtsen, but Amazon Prime is going to be shooting a documentary about the Ingebrigtsen brothers during the 2024 season, in which there is an Olympic Games and in which Jakob is expecting his first child in June with his wife, Elizabeth. So, yeah, they're not shying away from the media this year.
Jakob's pregnant? That's amazing. Anyways, Jakob has done all these interviews. And this Rick Broadbent piece was good. And when I put it up on the message board, I thought it would be almost too cheap to like just put the money quote that he said about Kerr. Because in the article, Broadbent wrote, he does not want this article to be all about Kerr, but is too frank to not give an opinion on the 26-year-old Scott. And when he gave the opinion, I thought this quote was like, I don't know, like almost unaware. Like the biggest issue is giving people like Kerr attention. That's what he is thinking. He's missing something in himself that he is searching for in others. I'm not the sort of guy to approve those sorts of things. I am strict in choice when it comes to my own mindset. If other athletes are not the same, I cannot respect them the way I respect myself. That's what I see in call rooms. Of course, people are not going to beat me because they don't have that half the mentality I have. I was like, Kerr wants attention? Then why are you doing all these interviews? It's fascinating. And it just proves my point, Mike. Look, every athlete thinks it's their mindset. They don't want to think it's their talent level. But that was an amazing quote. And
well, wait, I want to jump in here, Robert, because he's saying here, I just have to push back on it. The biggest issue is giving people like Kerr attention. No, Kerr has earned attention. You earn attention when you win the world title in the 1500 meters, one of the most competitive events in the entire sport. You earn attention when you set a world record, like Josh Kerr did this year. And you earn attention when you win world indoors on home soil. That's not just like, oh, people are talking about Josh Kerr, you know. Man, we're just giving him all this attention. No, we're talking about him because he's doing freaking amazing things on the track. So he earned that attention. And then Jakob's saying, you know, he's missing something in himself that he's searching in for others. I'm not the sort of guy to approve those sorts of things. I feel like there's a little bit of projection. They're both talking big, you know? They're both making these not blasphemous quotes. They're both very accomplished athletes in the sport, and they're both talking big. And Jakob's accomplished more than Josh, I'll admit that. But I think Josh has accomplished enough that he's able to speak his mind freely, and, you know, he's earned that respect. But I did find it kind of interesting because Jakob was talking about his rivals. He was saying, you know, I'm going to say my competitors are irrelevant in the way I see them all the same. One of the main issues is they are very inconsistent, and that means my rivals are always changing. From 2017, I have had 10 to 12 different rivals. It's easier for them to have a rival in me, but not as easy for me to have a rival in them. I do kind of get what he's saying there, because
100%. Jakob has
been, he's the guy they're shooting at. He wins all the races in the Diamond League. He's been the most successful in the championships, gold, silver, silver, the last 3 years in the 15, not to mention back-to-back world champ in the 5,000. His main competitors are changing. I would say from, you know, in that stretch since 2021, I guess, you know, in 2021, Chariot was the closest because he got silver at the Olympics and then beat Jakob in the Diamond League final. Since then, I mean, Kerr's championships record has been very good. He was third in the Olympics, sixth in Doha 2019, fifth in 2022 Worlds, first in Budapest last year. Kerr is not inconsistent, but Budapest was really the first time where he's actually challenging Ingebrigtsen in one of these races. So, you know, that quote, I don't think Jakob's totally off base, but I do think Josh is a consistent runner in championships. It's just he's not at the insane level of like gold or silver every time out that Jakob has been at.
Correct. But what Kerr has done this winter indoors is insane. So I think he's the number one rival now. But some of these other quotes were great as well, kind of unlike who he's loyal to and why some people may think he's an a-hole. I'm very attached to the people closest to me, but there's a very strong line around them, ... I don't really care for anything else outside. Moving on. It's a fine line between being like that and being an a-hole who just cares about themselves and is rude to everybody else. By the way, if you're into your running, I'm going to say something. One of my best friends in life said this to me when I was about 25. I was like, I was so insulted, but it's true. She's like, running is a very selfish activity. You have to be obsessed with yourself, your sleep, your fitness, whatever. I was like, what? I'm inspiring the masses. Nobody gives a shit about your running. So that was a great quote. But there was one quote that I loved, but I think it was factually incorrect. It's kind of like John's Week that was. Great article, but, you know, missing some few things. So, and he said this before, and this is kind of scary to me. What was it like to win Olympic gold? I was chasing that Olympic title my whole life, all the way to Tokyo. So there was an emptiness afterwards. That's scary to me. So there was an emptiness afterwards. You just won the goddamn Olympics. Why would there be emptiness? Then he says, but I quickly got back to where I'd been because my goal was never to win the 1500-meter gold medal. My goal was to be the best runner in history. It would take 5 or 6 Olympic gold medals to be better than all the different runners in all the disciplines. That would be the end of the discussion. All the different runners. And the goal was never to have the discussion again. I love that. Never to have the discussion again. But my critique of that is 5 or 6 golds is not going to do it.
Well, I just assumed he was trying to. I assumed he was trying to be the greatest distance runner of all time.
But Jakob, Dream bigger. I don't want you to be the best distance runner of all time. I want you to be the best track and field athlete, period, of all time. And what would it take to that? I think he needs to win. Like, well, I'm on record. He said, oh, you know, I might be retired. I'm like, dude, you remember when I said there's no chance in hell he retires for 2028 2 years ago? And now everyone's like, okay, now everyone agrees with me. There's no chance he retires for 2028. So I think he needs to win at least gold in 2024 and 2028 at three different Olympics like Bolt. But he needs to expand the repertoire. And in this article, and it's in the Times of London, he doubles down on the theory that his best event is the half marathon. So he needs to win. If he wins the gold in the 15, 5, and 10, no one's done that. That would be wild. It's a shame they don't have the half marathon for him. Maybe we should just start the half marathon for him. And if he can win from 15 to marathon, that's it. We bow down. We build the statue. We cancel the Olympic Games. They call it the Angry Britson Games from now on.
I'm not that interested in having this discussion, honestly. I just think it's absurd that a guy who has said he wants to be the greatest distance runner of all time, and he wants to be so good that no one ever has the discussion again, and Rojo accuses him of not dreaming big enough and that he needs to be the greatest track runner of all time. It's just kind of ludicrous. The other thing...
But John, I'm trying to help him out. These young kids don't know everything. Do you remember we were in Eugene and he said, I want to be the first one to ever win two Olympic golds in the 1500 back to back. And I'm like, Jakob, I'm pretty sure that's already happened. And I had a Wikipedia and I showed him. So just helping him with the history, John.
Right. But the other thing, you said you didn't understand how there was an emptiness after winning the Olympics. I mean, look, none of us are ever going to experience what it's like to win an Olympic gold, but I've listened to enough athletes talk about the Olympics, even just making the team, to totally understand where he's coming from. Again, imagine he's dedicated 10 years of his life to winning the Olympic gold medal. You're chasing it, you're chasing it, you're chasing it. You finally catch it. What's your, like, you've completed your goal. This is what you've focused your entire life around for a decade. And essentially the feeling is, now what? Like, this was my whole purpose, and now I've completed it at the age of 20. Where do I go from here? I can totally get how there's an emptiness there for a little bit, at least.
And so can a lot of incels that finally get to do the deed.
Robert, you haven't been sneaking another Peroni. Like, you don't have an IV hooked up that's just injecting you with alcohol right now, right? Like, I don't know where these comments come from.
No comment if that was my first experience, John. Thought that went through my head.
Okay, one last thing. Again, terrific article, Times of London. You should check it out. Read the whole story. But Jakob had a great line about, well, he had some interesting thoughts about dopers. He thought doping is worse now than it was 10 years ago. He said he's seen all these athletes get caught with the whereabouts failures, and that was worrying him. He's like, if they're being caught by whereabouts and not positive tests, he thought that meant people were getting smarter about the tests, so the tests weren't strong enough. And then he had an epic line about beating dopers. He said, it's the ultimate destruction. It's more embarrassing for them. Even when they have the balls to cheat, they're not doing it right. And I did wonder, I'm like, when was this interview conducted? Was this before or after Katia was suspended for whereabouts because he's beaten Katia in the last two global championships? Was this a jab at him, or is this just talking about dopers in general? I don't know. I found both of those lines quite interesting. What do you make of his claim that he thinks that doping's worse now than it was in 2014?
I think it's better, John. I think he's wrong. I think the testing's better. We've had a shitload of positive tests in Kenya. I guess you could say, oh, more people are doping. You could say we're catching a lot more people. I think Kenyans aren't quite the factor they were in the world scene 10 years ago. That'd be interesting to look at. I would say because of drug testing is one reason. I think it became endemic and a large part of the Kenyan culture, which is sad. There's tons of, I think, really good Kenyan runners, but I never thought it was that widespread, the doping.
Yeah, that was my sense, was with the positive tests. Like, I don't have that anecdotal numbers in front of me, but I feel like every day we get another announcement from the AIU that some Kenyan athletes tested positive. And yes, many of the high profile busts over the last few years, a number of them have been whereabouts failures. But we're also seeing a significant number of positive tests in Kenya, which we were not seeing. It's not that they haven't had a doping problem for a while, but it feels like now that we're getting more positive tests there than ever.
I mean, it's interesting you said this, John, because I asked Noah and his coach about doping. And let me pull up the quote here. Noah said, "I don't know if it's truly gotten worse or better. I hear about bannings all the time, but the thing about drugs is they're always going to be ahead of the testing. So first you have to catch somebody who is using something new to be able to create a new test for it." But then he goes on to say, "To be honest, I'm always going to assume that everybody's clean." And then I ask him, like, "Hey, like, distance runners, we sit around, we sort of speculate, like, so-and-so dirty. You know, do you guys do that?" And he said, "It happens more when we talk about the history of the sport, especially when you talk about the top five 100 times. Everybody but one person has been banned on that list. Kind of sucks." I mean, Noah knows his history, and it's pretty crazy, right? Now, he said some weren't full-fledged doping bans. He sort of, and then I'm like, well, there's one guy, there, the only guy who hasn't been banned is the greatest one of all time, Usain Bolt. It's like, well, what do you think about him? And he's like, he falls back. He's like, I operate on the assumption everyone's clean. You know, I am tested all the time. I'm pretty confident that they're back testing Usain's, you know, samples. That's one thing they have shown. They're willing to go after big fish. So I think the testing's better than it was. Human nature is human nature. People are going to try to cheat the system if they can. Some people, obviously.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap our weekly Jakob Ingebrigtsen segment.
Pretty crazy. We spent majority indoor season talking about a guy who didn't run indoors.
Well, I mean, he was dropping like nuclear takes every week, so we kind of...
but yeah, can we... Wait, we need to... My new best guy, Noah Lyles. We have to thank him for running indoors. Thank you, Noah. It made the sport much more interesting. Obviously, he was doing it for his own reasons, but... Winner of indoors, I think... Wasn't it the three dudes? They won like... $1,600 betting on Jordy Beamish to win the world. The podcast listeners, congrats to those guys.
Did you ask Noah if I got to him and made him run the pre-classic when I said, "Come on, Noah, you need to run the pre-classic"? Like, do I have any input? I mean, Jakob was watching the podcast.
No, I didn't. I should have had him record a jingle for the podcast. Maybe I can reach out to him. But that's what's going to happen. If Noah wins 4 gold medals, Robert's going to say, "I made him not complacent. I made him not complacent." I did listen to the Justin Gatwood. I asked Noah. I said, "Hey, man, like, is Zarian Knighton have better top end speed than you?" I tried to phase it kind of nicely. I think I just said it like that, actually. He said no. But he did talk about how Knighton, I think, can hold his speed very well, which I think is slightly different than top end speed, obviously. But then I pulled on the Justin Gatwood podcast, and what were they talking about? The one episode I hear, they talked about not Aaron Knighton, Tobogo. They're talking about how Tobogo was gaining on Noah Lyles at the end of the 200 in London. We all saw it with our eyes, so maybe there's some hope for Robert, but I don't know. Noah is 0.08 faster this year at the start, so look out.
I need a podcast with Josephus. What's a slower twin, not twin, but slower brother up to? That's who I should bond with.
Josephus, for the record.
He's now in Houston. He's gotten out of the shadow of his big brother, doing his own thing. I mean, someone would have said that should have happened at letsrun.com a long time ago. Wait, maybe this is the perfect thing. You partner with Josephus. John and I will run Let's Run. Robert has talked for the longest time. He needs to start a sprint site. Noah said there needs to be a sprint for him. So this is the chance. We can siphon off the sprint post. Give them their own focus, attention. You and Josephus start the Let's Run podcast of sprinting. The first year of the new coach, he's going to probably do really big things. Everyone knows the first year coach bounce.
Is he with Carl?
No.
Okay, guys. One more thing I want to talk about before we get to that Noah Lyles interview. That's Leonard Correa. You guys may recall in Orlando last month, he finished third in the Olympic marathon trials. He's still not officially on the U.S. team, but we got a tip from our Portuguese friend, Fabio Lima, that he'll be running the Lisbon Half Marathon on Sunday, trying to improve his world ranking. I've run the numbers to figure out like how fast he'd actually have to go to have any impact on his world ranking. It's not great news for Leonard. He would have to run very fast to move up. And the other thing is, Courier, he's currently 71st in the Road to Paris list, the top 80 as of May 5th, make the Olympics. Now, he's listed as 70th, but they're only including two Ethiopians because one of them doesn't have a birthday on the World Athletics profile. So really, he's 71st for all intents and purposes. But the top 68 in the rankings all have the auto time. And that automatically puts them ahead of anyone with rankings points. So the highest he can move up to is 69th. And to do that, he would have to run 59.31 on Sunday, which is 12 seconds faster than the American record. If he wants to move up to 70th, so one spot, he would have to run 59.49. Which is 6 seconds off the world record. That's 3 seconds faster than his PB from 2017. So I did talk to his coach, Scott Simmons, about this. He admitted, like, this is what he said. For him to change his standing, it's going to take a really good half marathon, a really remarkable half marathon. So they're realistic about this, but Lisbon is usually fast. There's usually multiple guys well under 59 minutes. If he's in shape to do it, again, he's only about 5 weeks removed from the trials, this is going to be a good shot for him to do it. I think more realistic for him to get that spot locked down, he is running the Rotterdam Marathon on April 14th. And this is something we were not sure is going to happen because USATF had been giving off mixed messages about whether athletes could actually chase the Olympic standard after the trials. Scott Simmons has confirmed with USATF, yes, he's allowed to run the a spring marathon, and he will be running Rotterdam, and if he runs 208.10 or faster in that race, he will be on the Olympic team. So I pose this question to you guys. He's in a pretty good spot. 71st out of 80, he'd need 10 people to pass him to fail to make the Olympic team. If you were Leonard Courier, would you run a spring marathon, or would you just stick it out and hope that what you've done is enough to put you on the team?
Don, please stop this long... I would run a spring marathon for the money. I'd run Boston for the money. Like, he's trying to, please don't tell me you actually think he's running, it's trying to get in the Olympics. No.
Well, wait a second. Run it for the money. No. If he was running for the money, he would run Boston. You think he's getting any money to run the Rotterdam Marathon? Do they care about some guy who, he's a 207 high guy? How much money is he getting from Rotterdam? Not very much, I would guess. Is he even allowed to accept appearance fees as being part of the army?
Oh, I don't know. I have no problem with him running a spring marathon. It doesn't hurt him. When he gets to the Olympics, he's going to get obliterated. So if it's either A, to get money, more money, or B, to increase your odds, go do it. So good for you, Leonard. It's kind of like, I don't like the college landscape where there's like basically free agency with no contracts. You know, there's no drafting either. It's the worst of professional sports, but you can't force people to do stuff. There's like laws in this country. USATF cannot force him to say you cannot run a race because they don't pay him. So I'm assuming he could sue them. So I'm glad that he's doing it from an athlete's rights perspective, which actually I'm contradicting an athlete's rights perspectives. But so I guess maybe it's his dream to run the Olympics. He wants to make sure. Absolutely. If it's not money, even better.
Well, he's already run in the Olympics. He made the team in 2016.
I'm assuming there's some monetary reason, John.
I don't really get why he's doing Lisbon. Moving up one spot seems it's not going to happen. I don't think he's going to. Good for him if he breaks the American record, essentially. I can see why you do Rotterdam. I think I might go with today's age, super shoes. I think you can bounce really well, give it a shot, secure your Olympic spot. I think it makes sense to me.
Right. I agree with you that it makes more sense to do Rotterdam than Lisbon, because Lisbon, the benefit is not as good. Rotterdam, there's a bigger benefit. And I also agree with Robert. I don't actually expect him to contend for a medal in Paris. The important thing for him is like getting into this race. So I think he'll get there either way. but I can get why he'd want to run Rotterdam. But Lisbon going there to maybe, like, he'd have to run out of his mind just to move up one spot. I'm not sure that it's worth it, but Scott Simmons feels like he's recovered sufficiently from the trials, so they're going out there.
So are we going to end this podcast without talking about, I mean, distance-oriented podcast. We're not going to talk about Daniel Simmons, indoor national record in high school level, 1338. Elizabeth Leachman, 1528, high school record. Drew Griffin runs 834, 2 mile, high school record, as Quincy Wilson ran 45.8.
I suppose we can, Robert, but
I think we're not, because the times are getting broken all the time, right? We're bored. You and I, the three of us as old men, are bored of it. It doesn't mean anything. And also, how lame is it? For the high school 5,000, it needs to be a thing. How lame is it that Simmons and Griffith didn't race each other in cross country, and they don't race each other indoors either? This is at the high school level. These guys ducking each other? It's ridiculous. So, for the record, I've asked John Keller to convert the 834.912 mile to 5,000. He says it's 1340, which is a little bit worse than Simmons. And he also converted to 3,076. And Leachman's incredible. She's from Texas like me. Great story. But when she's like doubling, I'm like, do you really need to double someone that age? I mean, it's like, why? Like, why are you running all those indoor races? I don't know. It's better than doing drugs and smoking pot all day as a high school 10th grader. So maybe it's a good thing they have an activity they're into. But like, yeah, to me, like, it doesn't move the needle.
All right. Glad sad, right? We've got confirmation for Robert that doubling an indoor national is better than doing drugs. Also, for the record, Daniel Simmons and Drew Griffith did race once this indoor season. They both ran the mile, the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix. Griffith was second in 4:02. Simmons just had an awful race, was 11th in 4:18. But I agree, it's kind of absurd. They didn't get to race in cross. They were at the same meet and they ran different events in 2 mile, you know, indoors. It doesn't bother me as much at the high school level as it would for the college kids or the pros especially, but yeah, it's a little unfortunate. The other thing is just, I'm with you, Robert. These records, I mean, college records are broken all the time as well, and we still kind of get excited about that, but we just follow college more. In high school, you know, it used to be if these people were breaking records that had stood for a while, and to be fair to Drew Griffith, the record he broke, he's run faster. Edward Cheserek had the old record, so that's a big deal. And it was 8:39 from 2013. It stood for a long time. He's now run 8:38 on an oversized track and 8:34 this indoor season. So both of those times, I'm like, I mean, that's really impressive stuff. But the thing that makes me just sort of like pause is there were three high schoolers last year who ran 8:35 or faster for the 2 mile outdoors. So, I mean, what Griffith is a phenomenal runner and what he's done is really impressive. But I'm also like, it doesn't register quite the same knowing that, like, the third fastest high schooler last year ran 8:35 outdoors. Like, we have seen these sort of times before, albeit not indoors.
Yeah, the distance records, because of the super spikes, they mean less. When the records are just falling every down, the sprint records aren't going down as much. Now, this 16, 17-year-old?
Quincy Wilson, 16-year-old sophomore, broke the national record in the 400 indoors, running 45.76 in Boston, then comes back and anchors his Bullis High School team from Maryland to the national record in the 4x4, 3:11. That's pretty phenomenal for a 16-year-old. I mean, he was born in January of 2008. So this was 1 month before the Patriots lost to the Giants in Super Bowl 42. That's when this guy was born.
Well, the previous record holder, LZ Coleman, you guys ever heard of him?
Nope.
Yeah, he never really did anything. Looks like went to Mississippi State and went to jail. Not a good outcome. But, I mean, this kid, this Quincy looks like a kid, man. Like, it's not someone who just, like, maybe he's not going to be that tall of a guy anyway, but, like, doesn't look like he's, like, super developed for a 16-year-old. So I hope all of these guys are superstars, pros, but
Let's not get carried away, because right now the shoes have changed everything. I think the sprinting time is actually this one's the most impressive to me. But I mean, sub 15:30, like John's like, oh, this 14:52 is going to last forever. I'm like, a high schooler just ran 15:28. At this point, do we have anyone listening who just wanted to listen to the Noah Lyles and Lance Brahman interviews, and now they're listening to about high school distance running? Our apologies. But hey, as we said, check the show notes. We always show when these interviews are. There's no introduction for these podcasts. I didn't know. I was just there at the training camp. Do you guys know what a speed endurance workout is, Robert and John? I watched Noah do a speed endurance workout.
Was that just what distance kids would call an interval workout, or it's different?
Interesting, John. That was more than I knew. Noah did a 220, a 180, and three 120s. And I'm pretty sure, John, on the 220, he ran a 200 and he split 20.5. Now, Lance told him to run 21.5, and Noah, of course, said I couldn't help myself. I didn't want to run faster. I just did. He claimed it was a good thing. He was trying to show off for the cameras, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, I was there. Essentially, we would get – there's no introduction to this thing. I didn't know I was going to turn into a podcast, but I figured it might as well now. I got essentially like about 20 minutes with each person, and there's really almost no ending because they're like trying to get on to the next person. So I found it interesting. I hope you guys do too. First up is Noah Lyles. I'll give a little introduction, I guess. We really need an introduction for Noah Lyles. The double world champion at 100 and 200. The American record holder at 200. He's only lost two 200 meter races ever as a professional. Possibly the face of track and field in America on the men's side. Well, right now he is, but he could be through 2028. Then his coach, Lance Brahman. Coached Tyson Gay to the double back in 2007. That's a crazy story. Lance was actually in jail at that time. Lance didn't want to talk about that. I mean, this guy's done it all. Now, currently he's coaching on the men's side, the best 100 meter, 200 meter, and 400 meter runner, coaching Wade Van Niekerk. So he's up second. Here's Noah Lyles. We just started rolling when he was talking about some of the young guys in the sport. Enjoy.
And the ones around. Well, we can talk about.
No, we can go.
Yeah,
well, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the new kids around. You know, of course, you have Wei and you have Arion, but I'm looking at the ones that we have here. You know, Jaden Slade and Udodi. Like, gosh, every time I look at Udodi, I'm like, goodness gracious, you remind me of like a younger me. I ran a talent, but he's more talented than I was by far. But still, like watching it, every time I look at him, like I'm a little hard on his form, because I know that if he gets his form right, he's gonna jump like dramatically in his times. But again, I kind of try to remind him, like, this is gonna be a process. But you have the makings to really set fire to the sport.
Yeah, see, you guys sort of mentoring these guys on the track, like,
yeah, everybody. The mentoring that I really try to do is in the weight room, because it's one thing to do it on the track. It's a lot easier to get the concept, but taking the concept from the weight room and relating it back to the track, that's what I always got to try to remind them of. And then they start kind of understanding why they do each thing.
So it really helps with your form on the track, or makes you
skinny? Yeah, especially the auxiliary things like power cleans and the squats and all that. It's kind of easy. You know, you're building a bigger engine, more powerful, run faster. But when you start doing stuff like the walking lunges, and you're doing the step ups, and you're doing step ups with bands, it's just like, why are we doing all this? Like, why are we doing this a harder way? I was like, well, I want you to be able to put power down to the ground, but I also want you to throw your hips out so that you can force it down the track.
Oh,
and you're like, so now you understand why I say you don't have to bring your knee above the parallel, but you do need to throw your hips down the track. Okay, that makes a little bit of sense. So, stuff like that.
So you mentioned
Tobogo and Arian. I didn't prompt ever thinking about those guys. Like, you think about other people in the sport at all? Like,
oh, of course. I like to keep my tabs on everybody, no matter what they're doing. Even if they haven't run for a while, I'm just like, okay, let me see what you're doing. All right, cool. Have fun. But it's not in a row that I feel like, well, I'm trying to look in on everybody's secret weapon. It's more just saying like, hey, what you up to? But, you know, sometimes they're doing pretty cool things, and sometimes they're keeping it low key. So, you know, you get different things for everybody.
Tobogo 300 world record.
Yeah.
That mean anything to you?
I mean, I think it's kind of a weird situation where I already knew he was good at his endurance. That's not the thing that I believe is going to be his greatest improvement. I think his greatest improvement is going to be in the weight room and also in the 100. Like, the faster his 100 gets, I think the faster his overall, you know, ability is going to dramatically improve. Similar to how my career kind of is, you know, that's really where I see it. And then after watching him at Worlds, I'm like, yeah, you have the talent, obviously, and you have the ability to grow. And I think that as you get older and you get stronger and you're very purposeful with your strength, you're going to be, you know, a lot bigger of a force to be worried about.
I mean, is his top end speed almost yours?
I don't think so.
One of those Diamond League, maybe?
I haven't seen any numbers that have proven that his top end speed was higher than mine, but he definitely have put together great races, and it's a lot more consistent. So where his top end speed is very high, it's more of he is able to hit that number multiple times. So in 10-meter segments, you would see the same top end speed be very close to each other.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Indoors.
Well,
A+?
A+ for sure. A+ for sure. It would have been an S ranking if I got the grade, but it's definitely an S+. Yeah, I've really enjoyed indoor this season. It's my longest indoor season by far. So that was, you know, weird in itself. And then going to World Indoors and everybody asking me like, hey, did you come here because you're trying to increase the sport? No, I'm coming here because I never got to come here before. Like,
you didn't have the option, right?
I wasn't fast enough. I wasn't ranked at the top 5 in the 60 in the U.S. So there's no way I was going to be able to make it for the World Indoor team if they want to take top 2.
Did that make the winter more interesting? I mean, obviously you did it for focusing on 100.
Yeah.
You had to compete a lot more.
I mean,
you can't do that in practice, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, again, one, being able to match up with your competitors in your WICR event, it forces you into your uncomfortable zone. You know, it's not where you would normally be. And it says, if I can do this here, then I can definitely do this outdoor. And then also, you know, being able to run back to back, you know, gets that confidence up constantly. And then running 360s in one day really throws in your confidence, and then throwing a 4x4 at the end. It's like, wow, okay, I am fit. I'm in shape. There's not much to really worry about.
Yeah, fuck it. You just 3 races in one day. That's,
I mean, it's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what idea that was, but I'm not the biggest fan of it.
You sure, man. So you ran what point? How much faster in the 60 this year than last year?
1.08, I believe.
What does that mean for 100?
It means that if we add that to what I've already done in the 200, I'm running 1910. And I believe like 965, somewhere around there. I haven't done the math for the 100, but it would be somewhere around
there. For the Peacock documentary, those are your times, right? 965, 1910, all right?
Yeah, 1905 and 960. Or 1910 and 1960.
1960.
Yeah. So,
what do you mean 960?
960, yes, my bad. So many nines.
Yeah. Coach Lance was asking him, would you rather have a world record or gold medal?
Gold medal.
Okay, good. He's like, you better answer like this.
Yeah, it was pretty much on the same mindset. Medals last forever as long as you don't get banned. But records will always be broken.
You mentioned doping. How much of a problem do you think it is in the sport? Do you worry about it? I mean, there's such a fine line, right?
Yeah.
That's a tenth of a second.
Yeah.
Testing's way better than it used to be, but
yeah.
I think back in the day, like when your dad ran, it was like,
it was really bad.
You know,
I mean, I don't even know if it was really bad. Or, like, if it's truly gotten worse or better. Like, yes, I hear about bannings all the time, but the thing about drugs is it's always going to be ahead of the testing. So you first have to catch somebody who was using something new to be able to create a new test for it. So I don't know if it's how bad it really is. True, to be honest, I'm always going to assume that everybody's clean until I see something that just looks a little too fishy. But that's always my.
I feel like distance runners sit around and talk about, oh, I think this guy's dirty. Do sprinters do that?
Sometimes it happens more when we talk about like the history of the sport, especially when you talk about like the top 500 times. Like everybody but one person has been banned on that list. Kind of sucks. And some of them weren't even banned for, you know, what you would say true doping, but it's kind of just, you know, unfortunate. But
the problem with that is then people say, oh, you can't run that fast clean. You must be doping, right? Which I hate.
Exactly.
I hate. Radcliffe to a world record in the marathon. But she ran so much faster than someone else. She has to be doping. I'm like, that's not fair.
That's not my belief.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, I got here and I'm not doping. Whether you believe that or not is up to you. But now apparently I'm running so fast, people are saying that I sold myself to the devil, which is crazy. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that is a thought in the sport. It's not how I like to think most of the time. I usually take it for face value until proven otherwise.
And Bolt, do you think his times were clean?
I take it for face value. He hasn't been. You can't tell me that they were not at his door every day and that they weren't testing him every championship, because I'm getting tested every week, every championship. So I know this world record holder who's put down multiple fast times, they have been testing constantly. And you can't tell me that they still don't go back to his samples that he's probably kept for science, and they're still testing that. So I'm going to keep believing it.
And as you said, they've busted whatever, many four of the top five or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, the 4x4. You know, it's funny. So I posted on Let's Run, like, hey, I'm talking to Noah. What should I ask? People are like, I sort of disregarded the 4x4. He's talking about 4x4 medals. I thought I thought that was marketing. Now I think it's for real.
Yeah, that was the goal, to get it out of the idea of marketing and into reality. And a lot of people think, or a lot of people are upset, but they don't know that the reason you turn it into marketing is so people have some inkling of belief. So once that's out in the universe, now you go up to your coach and it's like, hey, let's train for it. Let's be able to do everything. You know, you don't got to convince Coach B about being a 400 runner very hard. He's quick to jump on that. So,
I mean, no concerns that it would mess up the 100 or 200.
Well, the good thing about it is the 4x4 is the last event.
But you have to change your training to get ready for it or anything?
Not really. I mean, I have always trained like smack dab in the 200 meter zone. So it's always given me the ability to go back and forth. I have a great 300 meter time, and I've put up splits in high school that I just ran as a professional now. And we've been focusing on the 60, the 200, and the 4x4. I mean, I told everybody after the first round at the 60, they said, how have you been preparing? I did some 200 workouts. I wasn't lying. We were doing 200 workouts. Like the workout we did today was very similar to what I did before we went over to Glasgow. Just being able to have, I mean, I'm just an athlete. I think that's the best way to say it. I'm an athlete. I can handle all.
And you're going to do a 4x4 or 400 open four before the trials? Like what's the plan there?
We've been thinking about it, especially since we don't want to open up in April. We're going to open up probably in May. So, you know, running a 400 at like Tom Jones or Florida Relays has been in the talks. It definitely has. But we don't know yet, because maybe this is enough. Maybe the, you know, saying that, hey, if I'm running this fast and we haven't even got to the peak of my career, you know, maybe that's enough belief for them. But all in all, no, I can't see doing too many 400s after May.
Makes sense. I mean, as a fan, I think you got to do one more. We'll do one.
I don't think it's enough. I'm not saying I'm not going to do it in my hand. The thing is, I planned Royal Indoor specifically because it was just high enough for people to say you would have pressure on you to run and have to run something well. And it was just rare enough to say, if we mess this up, you know, nobody's going to remember any.
Yeah. Well, it's on Instagram, the NBC people, they made them predict what you're going to run.
Yeah.
I don't think any, maybe Trevor Hardy said you run under 45 in the 45s.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say that.
Man, I might have said 499, but everyone else is like 46. I was sort of shocked.
Yeah. Right. I was too, because
he said 45. I see him every day, and
yeah. Yeah, but the craziest thing is it could have been faster, but my coach told me to come through the 200 at 21.5. So where did I come through the 200 at? 21.5. And he said, just build it from there. But if he would have told me to come through at 21.2, I would have easily just came through at 21.2 and still had the same buildup, and it just would have been a faster race.
Like, I saw you today, like, the pace, you got the pace that's sort of ingrained. You know what it feels like?
Actually, I don't anymore. I used to know what it felt like, but my body is just stronger. And because it's stronger, it produces times faster and easier. So like today, he told me we did a 220. He said, come through at 21.5. I did what I felt was 21.5 pace. I didn't try to push anything very hard. I tried to just work on form after I got off the turn. And I ended up running 20.5. So, and that's been happening all year. So where I thought I knew pace, and I did have it ingrained in my body has changed and has become faster.
Is that a good thing, or is he mad that you ran
too fast? No, it's a great thing. Because if he knows that I'm able to do the whole workout at that pace and not lose anything from it and get everything he wanted, then it's working. It's working.
The socks.
Star Wars.
But it's Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But you're the good guy, though, shouldn't?
Oh, I just like Star Wars.
One, so.
I have quite a few Star Wars socks, and this is one of them. I also have Chewbacca socks as well. So, yeah, those were just the ones that I saw, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to put these on.
And the car out there looks pretty nice. It looks new.
Yeah.
Is that with a new contract?
No.
Nobody buys at it?
No, I got that from, when did I get that? I got that after Eugene. So I've had it for a little while now. But, yeah, I had to get rid of my other car because it could only hold two people, and it barely did that well.
What was your previous car?
It was a BMW i8. And then I got the Tahoe, which is out here because my girl drives that. And those are the two cars. That used to be me and Josephus's mileage car. We put all the mileage on the Tahoe.
That's smart. Yeah. You do so much promoting the sport, doing this. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
No, like, it's an honor. But also, I saw you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I need to watch more of that. I know distance running like the back of my hand, and I'm involved with track every day, but I don't watch too much stuff just because it's my thing. But the sprint stuff I should watch because I don't know your world as much.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I actually did a podcast with Andrew of Total Running Production.
I was about to go there.
And yeah, we talked about that exact thing because a lot of forums are based around distance running. And I feel that there's just as much to talk about in the sprints. And it's always been a weird concept to me that there has just not been that much development as much as there have been forms on the distance side.
Yeah, I was about to say, for someone who wants to follow the sprints, where should they go? And also, what should we at Let's Run do to help cover the sprints better? Like, we'll cover it, maybe we should have a sprint separate forum or something.
I've truly been thinking the same thing, that there pretty much should be a sprint separate forum because what has kind of happened is they've gone to Twitter. And, you know, Twitter's Twitter. No, Twitter's, I'm just going to leave it at that. But having a better place for people to share information, I feel would be a lot easier and a lot more fun. But I'd say Justin Gatlin recently has been starting his own podcast. And I've been listening to it quite often. And it's really good because they don't just talk about times and people winning. They talk about the mental states. And they talk about the overall bigger picture at times. And I think it's very important for people to hear that. Because just like how I got myself into the flat floor, that took a lot of planning and a lot of politics. And I think that a lot of sprinters just believe as long as you win battles, everything will come to you. And that's not always how it happens.
Well, so it did take politics to get on the team? Like,
there's just politics in anything. Yeah. You know, I have to ask. I mean, but asking is politics. Learning to ask the right person, that's politics. Knowing to say, I'm going to show up every day that you guys are warming up is politics. saying that even if you don't choose me, I'm gonna land up with you and I'll be here just in case everybody else gets hurt at one moment. If there's a freak accident, I'll be here. I'll be ready for you. That's positive.
There you go. I need to listen to the Gatlin podcast.
Yeah.
Because even the Otto Bolden thing on Instagram, I was trying to listen to it. I had to like pull it up on Instagram. I was driving yesterday. Like, I'm like, this should be a podcast.
Yeah, it should. It should have been. Because we've done a few of them, but I feel that they should be a little like maybe a recorded Zoom session. But yes, you better listen to Justin. He's doing it with a coach. I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Green. And he's, you know, coaching a few professional athletes in the local area. But they know the sport and they know the history. And it's very nice to hear. It's very refreshing to hear.
All right, real quick, the rivalry, like Fred, Christian, any Tobogo. I don't know, people like.
I feel that this Christian and me rivalry it's been one of the longest. Of course, there's me and Michael Norman in the 200, but, you know, of course, he has to run the 4. But this me and Christian rivalry has been doing really well. I mean, I was talking to the NBC guys, and they were telling me that this was some of the biggest numbers they've seen in the past, like since the Olympics. They said 2 million people watched Albuquerque just for the 60. And when I hear that, I get elated because now I'm like, there's something here. We can capitalize on it. So
yeah, that's why they should have put Will Indoors on NBC. So.
That's another story that's completely different person's issue. Yeah, that's less NBC and different topic.
Man, so I don't need that one. Thank you.
Up next is Lance Brahman. That's Noah Lyles' coach and the head coach of the Adidas Pure Athletics Group. They've currently got 12 athletes. In addition to Lyles, Wade Van Niekerk is in the group. So currently they have the number one 100, 200, and 400 meter runners in the world. Lance in the past coached Tyson Gay to the double in 2007. He coached Veronica Campbell-Brown, Shawnee Miller-Weibo, amongst others. Oh yeah, when we recorded with Lance, it was like a wind tunnel. We ran it through some software to get rid of the wind. It did an amazing job. But a couple points, you can't hear anything if we removed the wind, so you'll hear some wind. But it lasts a couple seconds, and then it's back to sounding pretty good. Enjoy.
All right, Noah Lyles. About Noah first.
Sure.
Indoor season?
Great.
A+?
Yeah, A+. Everything we wanted out of it, maybe even a little bit more. So, yeah, just was part of the plan this year to get a few wins and keep looking out the first part of the race. Things we're doing are working. I'm very happy with it. And, you know, we're ready to move on outdoors now.
And outdoors, the goal is?
To make the team in 100, 200 meters.
And Noah talks about this. Well, 4x1 will come. What about the 4x4?
Man, I don't coach the American Relays. It's none of my business. They have to choose who they're putting on these things. That has nothing to do with it.
And indoors, controversy is the right word, but some people are like, oh, no, I shouldn't have been on the team. Like, any thoughts on that? Like, how that came about?
No, it's, like I said, it's, you know, how it originated was is that, you know, I said, hey, if they end up needing a leg coach, I can run it. I was like, yeah, if they need a leg, sure, why not? And then they decided that they thought that they could use him. And so I asked him, and he said, yeah, I'll run it. And it fits in with what we're doing training right now. So I was totally okay with it.
Yeah. Did you have, if I'd asked you beforehand, what he'd split, what would you have guessed?
I assumed he'd split somewhere in the 45s.
Yeah. I'm sort of surprised because the NPC guys, they did something on social media. Like, oh, I don't know, they were 46 something. So he ran great. Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have the benefit of coaching a guy every day, so I kind of know what kind of shape he's in. So it wouldn't have been a fair guess if I'd have gave one beforehand. But yeah, I see him run every day and I know what we're doing, and that's where he was capable of going, was somewhere in the 45s, and that's what he did. So yeah, all great.
And outdoors, I can't believe I'm talking about the 400, but if he wants to run the 4x4, I assume we'll have to run at least a few relays or an open fourth. Is there going to be any of that in there?
The only thing we're worried about right this very minute are trying to make the team into 100 and 200 meters. Besides that, it's irrelevant.
100 meters. You guys did it. 100 gold, 200 gold last year.
Sure.
Now Noah's 0.1 something faster in the 60. How much faster?
somewhere in that range. I mean, 0.08 or whatever, but somewhere in that range. Sure.
What do you think that means for the 100?
You know, we're working on the part of the race that he needed the most work on. And, you know, if he's with those guys at 60 meters, he's pretty good to last 40. So, you know, it's going to be hard to hold him off. But at the same time, you know, there's a bunch of really good guys in this country. There's a bunch of really good guys in the world. So they're all trying to step up their game too. And, you know, that's what I have at trials.
In our sport, especially in sprinting, you can't really control what somebody else does, right?
Nope. It's a non-contact sport. So the only thing you can control is what's in your lane.
And a lot of the guys, you know, posturing at the start, does your start influence somebody else? Like how much can you impact somebody else?
Depends on the person, depends on the environment. I mean, it's some guys are easily intimidated, some guys aren't. Some guys can get in their own little world and that's where they need to be. So at the end of the day, you can only take care of what you can control, and all you can control is your lane. And you know, the hardest part about the 100 meters is understanding that, you know, you have to do what you do best. And at the end of the day, is it going to be good enough to be the first guy at the 100 meter line? You know, everybody has their strengths. Everybody has their weaknesses. Everybody has things that they're working on. But, you know, you hear, oh, well, the star spit. Star doesn't matter if you're the first one to the line. You know, it's about putting together an entire race, and there's three segments to that. And, you know, it's the guy that puts together the best three segments overall that generally wins.
Obviously, last year, Noah raised the game a bit in 100. People act like that was new. In 2018, he was U.S. champion, missing off here. 2019, Diamond League champ, I think. He's run 9.8 before 2018 and 19, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a world junior champion.
Last year, obviously, he didn't run the 100 of worlds before, but like, was he, his times weren't that much faster. Was he just more consistent? You were more confident in him every time out? Like, what was the difference? Noah's a 100 meter runner now, or after this indoors, it may be even better, but how would you say 2023 Noah versus 2019 Noah and the 100? What's different?
Well, I mean, he's more mature. He's gotten stronger, but at the end of the day, sprinters sprint. And, you know, the way I train sprinters and how I always train them is, you know, you have to have the ability to run both events, one and two. You know, 19 was about his first world championship. He'd never been to one, so we went there, lined up for the race he was the best at the time to see if he could, you know. So 2020, we were going to run more hundreds, and he had a pandemic. 21, the plan was to run more hundreds, but he was dinged up most of the year. He was just, you know, getting fed by trials that year. So, you know, he ran some hundreds, but it was more so to get ready for the two. And then, you know, he was fortunate enough to still get a bronze medal at the Olympics, which was awesome. Turned around real fast at Prefontaine. So that was a good year. And then in 21, the focus was on trying to become the world champion again in the 200. The training was going really well, and we thought that he might have a shot at running, you know, in that 19.4, 19.3 range, and just put the emphasis towards it. And then in 23, because 24, the goal all along was to be an Olympics that you tried both one and two. So we went ahead and did the work last year so that he'd get an idea of what that was going to feel like.
Once Noah can run 100 at the level he's at now, is doing a double much harder? Obviously, Mike Bolt was crazy good, but he won three Olympics. Tyson Gay won, pulled the double. Are you risking something by attempting the double?
I'll just go back to my same statement. Sprinter sprint, if you're good enough and you have the ability to do both sprints, you do both sprints. You know, in this sport, to be considered one of the best of all times, you have to do special things. And part of doing special things are running a couple of events at an Olympic Games. So that's the type of athlete he is. And, you know, the emphasis right now is just trying to make the team at both. And if that happens, then we'll turn the switch and get ready for Paris if we're fortunate enough to be in it.
It is kind of crazy. There's no room for error in the U.S.?
Zero.
I mean,
the Olympic trials is probably every 4 years the hardest meet in the world.
Are you more relaxed at the Olympics than the Olympic trials?
That's hard to say. I mean, there's a lot more on the line at the Olympic trials because you have to make the team and you don't have a choice there. You have to be ready that day. So I'd say that from a nerve standpoint, sure, I think the Olympic trials are a little bit more nervous, but you know, the Olympic Games still brings its own interesting parts of the sport. So the idea is to do everything you need to do throughout a year to be ready for both if you're fortunate enough to be there.
And Mike Marsh is here today, like he's taping off something on the track. Like, what's
Oh, he just happened to be in town, and he's trying to do some algorithmic formula with, I can't even say the word, some formula with their start marks and so forth. So he just wanted them to measure it off so that he could put it into his formula and try to come up with some ideas as they get closer and closer to that time of year. But it's
so that tape a lot of people they'll use down the road or something for something.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to deal with a lot of people because you don't know who's going to be on the team.
Noah's got the Netflix crew. We're here all day today. He's big into promoting the sport. Does that motivate him, or do you think sometimes are you worried, oh, that's going to get away from him, just focusing on what's important?
You know, everybody's different, and, you know, this type of stuff does motivate him. He enjoys it, and as long as it's productive to his training, I'm totally fine with it. If it starts affecting training, then we cut it out. And me and him have a good enough relationship, we can have those conversations, and when it starts to get too much, I just simply let his management know, and they cut it out.
Makes sense. The 100 meters is sort of like the heavyweight boxing in the sport. There's rivalry a little bit. You know, sometimes I'm more posturing than not, but do you get caught up in that? Do you assess, oh, wow, like, Tobogo's doing this, Curly's doing this, we got to up our game, or like, how do you think about the other guys at all?
From my standpoint, no, not really, because we still have to do the things we need to do for him to run as fast as he can run. At the end of the day, it comes down to that. As far as the rivalries and the posturing and all that type of stuff, hey, whatever gets all these guys running fast, I'm all for. Because the faster the other guys run, the faster he's going to run. And that's when special things happen. I mean, you got a lot of guys running fast when both of us run fast. He was, but, you know, 980 doesn't even get a medal in London. So, you know, when somebody steps it up, and everybody does, and it's great for us.
It's funny you said that, because in researching this, that was, I guess you would know more than any. I'm like, Tyson Gay ran 980 and didn't medal. He ran 971 and got smoked. I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's still fast as hell, though.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Getting to coach at this level, like, your dad's a great coach, right? He doesn't get to do this.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, do you, I mean, something you appreciate every day, like, sort of?
Yeah, I mean, I do, if you ask, sure. I mean, it's a, you know, I was fortunate enough to find something I wanted to do, and it was that I'd probably do for free, but I'm fortunate enough that I could do it and get paid for it. So, yeah, this is what I love to do, and this is what I'm made to do, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to do it.
And then bringing in athletes to the group, is it sort of like a joint deal with Adidas, or do you recruit them, or Adidas says, hey, I got this guy for you? Like, how do you guys determine who comes in the group, who's a good fit?
Yeah, it's a, you know, nobody has to come here. It's an available spot if they want to do something different from what they did before. You know, nobody's made to come, and I don't take everybody that wants to come. You know, you have to fit in with what I think is important to be a great athlete. And, you know, you have to fit into the system. You have to fit into the people that are already in the group. So, you know, I think, and I've always thought that if you look at the history of the sport, the best sprint programs came from groups. Best sprinters come from groups. They train in groups because it keeps you accountable, and it gives you a good litmus test on the days you don't really feel like getting something done. You look out there, and some of the people you're going to be competing against on a daily basis are out there getting it done. You have a tendency to jump right in and keep going. So it's a, you know, I get tired of the adage, but, you know, iron sharpens iron. I mean, it's a good chance to see where you're at on a daily basis and get you ready for big competitions. And it also puts you in a position that, you know, you see somebody that's supposed to be really good. Well, you train with those types of guys every day. They don't intimidate you.
Yeah. And is there, I mean, the guys in the group can motivate you sort of, but then there's also, you know, other groups. Is there rivalries between the groups, between you and other coaches? Or is that more at the athlete level, you'd say?
Yeah, I don't see it that way. I mean, everybody's got their group that they're trying to train. And, you know, if that gets people motivated to train hard, I'm sure people use it, but it's not really anything that I get caught up in. You know, I can only worry about the people that I train. I don't know. Maybe I'm not smart enough or have enough time to worry about other people, but I don't. I just, you know, the ones that want to come here and train hard, come here and train hard. And if they've been here and decide they want to do something else, they're free to go somewhere else and try it. And, you know, it's truly a situation that at the end of the day, I like people watching people run fast, whether they're in my group or not. But I prefer it to be the people in my group.
This level, it's amazing what the body can do, right?
boom, boom. That's probably a tenth of a second.
Yeah, just leave. Yeah.
I mean, that's, you're good, you're not good. Like,
it's a tenth of a second. It's hard to stop on a stop.
Yeah, you can't do it. I was trying to do it on my thing to see the other day and I couldn't do it.
Not every time. It's tough.
9 out of 10 times you line them up, Noah Lyles will beat somebody. There's no room for error. Like, how do you, I guess, what separates Noah Lyles from the guy 0.2 behind him?
Yeah. You know, everybody at this level is very talented, or you wouldn't be at this level.
Right.
But at the same time, not everybody has the same talent level. You have to have a special talent to do special things. And with that, you have to have this right mindset to continue to work on the things you need to do to get better and not be complacent on the fact that you just have talent. Because like I said, everybody at this level has talent. You know, what stands out, and I've had some people run really, really fast in my career. You know, that I've been fortunate enough to be in a, you know, relationship with as far as coach athlete. But, you know, the one thing that most of those all had in common were the fact that they weren't complacent on just being good. They wanted to be great. And it was more of an internal drive than it was external, meaning, you know, they'd run out here to Claremont meet for free if it's going to get them better. You know, so.
And that is a crazy thing with our sport, right?
Yeah.
Well, they'll meet here with 100 people and then they'll go to the Diamond League and. Needs to get
down. Six of the same eight guys. Yeah. Yeah. It's just important that they should get paid, and it's important that they're professional athletes. And I think that in our sport, people forget that because the federations are so involved at major championships and so forth. But on a daily basis, I mean, this is how these guys make their money and feed their family and everything else.
And I mean, having coached two double world champions, do you ever compare like Noah to Tyson? Like,
I try not to compare any of them to one another. I mean, there's similarities in certain things, but when I start looking at similarities, it's not person to person. It's more just the math, you know, okay, we're doing this workout and we ran it this time comparatively to where Tyson was at that time back then. I'll look at it because it'll be some similar as far as workout goes, but it's more of just a, I don't know if the right word's a litmus test of where we're at in training, but it gives me a good idea of, okay, well, this is where we're at and this is what we're doing. You know, I think that, yeah, personally right now, you know, if things keep going the way they're going for this year, Noah's showing that, I mean, he could be a 9.7 low, 9.6 high guy just based off of his times and the math that we're using for workouts and everything else. And, you know, will he run that fast? I don't know. We'll see. But that's the type of athlete he is.
What does that equate for the 200?
Well, you know, if he gets that much better in 100, which is about 1%, then you get 1% better in the 2. If everything's equal and, you know, maybe you can run the world record, you know, 1915, 1912, somewhere in that range based off the same math, if I'm using it correctly. And, you know, will he do that? Now, that's hard to say. I mean, when you start talking that fast, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of intangibles that you can't control. Weather, time of year, environment, you know, how tired are you from running, you know, 3 races before you get to that, and which is 5 when you get to the final. And, you know, there's a lot involved, but, you know, I don't talk about world records. It's not how I'm made. I think the world records happen when special things are all lined up at the right time. And the better the world record gets, the harder it is to achieve. So, you know, right now, the only goal for me, for him or anybody else in my group is to make the team. And once they make the team, then we'll worry about what happens at the Olympics. And if they are fortunate enough to be at the Olympics, then we're trying to medal. And if you medal, we're trying to win. And if you win, that's all that really matters, because once you're an Olympic champion, you're always an Olympic champion. And I know.
I guess I made you pick. You'd rather have a gold medal than a world record?
Yeah, 100% every single day.
Think Noah's the same way?
I hope so. But I think that we think similar in that era. But I mean, world records are great, but it's not what this sport should be about. The sport's competition, the sport's running against the other guys in the race, but still taking care of what you can control. And anytime a world record happens, it should be special, because it's hard, but you can't plan for it. You can't train for it. You train to win races. I mean, that's what this is when you win races, fast times come.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a coincidence that the world records are set at either Olympic Games or World Championships.
Yeah, like, I mean, all the bolt ones were, right?
Yeah, they're ready to go.
You're ready to go, and
I mean, you have stars aligned
the right time,
and the weather has to be right, and you have to be in the best shape of your life. And I mean,
I was watching the peacock thing, and Noah was talking about the world record in Jamaica. I'm like, no, like, I don't know if that was for the cameras or what, but like, maybe with the weather or something. Actually, Bolt broke the record at that Grand Prix in New York. I was there. It rained that day.
Yeah, it was a special
day. And I almost didn't go. I was like, rain delay.
Yeah, it was a special day. It just rained.
Yeah.
The atmosphere was right.
There's something weird with the rain, right? It was right after the rain.
Barometric pressure drops, so the air's a little thinner.
I guess fine lines in the sport. Doping. The whole doping thing is crazy. Like, I feel like distance runners, we get together, we talk about like, so-and-so and this, such and such. But like, as we said, like, boom, boom. Like, how big of a problem do you think doping is now in the sport? Like, testing's crazy, much better than it was, like, when I was around in the 2000s. Like, sure.
I mean, you know, people are going to do what people do. All I can control is my thought process on it, which I don't believe in it, never have. I think that the most talented individual, God-given ability with the right training and the right work ethic and all that type of stuff should be the guy that wins the race. I don't believe in shortcuts. I don't believe in any of that. So that's my philosophy. I try to ingrain that in the people that I train. You know, people make mistakes over time. Some of them are accidental. Some of them are purposeful. Who knows at the end of the day? But all I can do is speak on a regular day about my philosophy with the thought when it comes to that. And I just don't believe in it.
Yeah, what happened to Tyson? I don't know if he's with you, but he's with Drummond. Like, what happened with that whole situation?
Yes. That's Tyson's story. I don't talk about other people's stories. All I know is that, you know, it wasn't something that it was a very surprising situation. But besides that, that's his story. He can tell it as he wants.
I saw you hitting golf balls. You're a big Auburn fan, but then you got two daughters. Like, outside the track, what are your...
I'm a regular dude. I mean, that's the thing about this sport is that, you know, it's a in this country, it's a huge participation sport. But it's not huge on a professional level. So, you know, the best part about what I do and especially being here in Claremont and everything else is that my neighbors don't even know what I do really for a living.
That's a different guy.
How can you live here and you coach age group track? I don't know. I guess I'm good at it. I don't.
Really?
This works. Oh, yeah. Nobody really understands how this works. And I'm fine with that. I mean, whether it's good or bad or indifferent, you know, I tend to live my life in boxes of, you know, family time and track time. And, you know, I'll go play golf. I'll go fishing. I'll lift weights. I do other things. It's trying to keep myself as centered as possible because of, you know, just like anything else, if you get too enthralled in it, it ends up being a detriment more so than a benefit. And I think that you need to be able to take your mind, go different places and, you know, live as much of a normal life as possible. And the same thing for these guys. I mean, it gets hectic. You go to Europe and you got all these people asking for autographs or, you know, the USA championships, but Warren Claremont, Noah, what goes to Panera Bread and gets a sandwich and he just lives a normal life here. I think Tyson was the same way and Veronica and Shanae and Tori and
nobody bugs him.
And that's the best part about being here.
All right, good. Appreciate it.
No worries.
A big thank you to Lance and Noah for letting us observe their training for a day. To everyone else in the group, we've got some more interviews as well. Big thank you to Global Athletics for setting it up. And if you enjoyed this, well, first of all, we hope you're a Let'sRun.com fan checking it out every day. But if you want to take your Let'sRun.com fandom to the next level, you need to be a Supporters Club member. You'll get a second podcast every week, a bonus podcast only for Supporters Club members. You get a super soft t-shirt, savings on running shoes. Join today, letsrun.com/subscribe. If you use code CLUB25, you'll save 25% off your first year.